The office looked calm on the outside. Numbers on screens, plants in corners, soft hum of air conditioning. Inside her chest, it felt like a burning warehouse. She had already tried being quiet, tried avoiding him, tried changing her schedule, walking a different route to the break room, laughing off comments that did not feel like jokes. None of that worked. The final push had come on a Tuesday afternoon, when his hand stayed on her shoulder too long and his smile carried a warning. So she did what the handbook told her to do. She wrote down what happened, dates, times, names. Then she walked that report into HR, thinking this was the safe room behind the safe door. The HR officer looked her in the eyes and said the right words. Zero tolerance, confidential, protected. She believed him for about 3 days. Then her projects changed. Her calendar shifted, and the man she reported stared at her in the hallway and said one low sentence that told her everything. He already knew. Chapter 1, The Safe Door That Wasn't. It started with the report, late evening. Most of the building had emptied out. Cleaning staff moved carts down the hallway. A few monitors still glowed in the open office. She sat alone at her desk and finished typing the last line of what she was willing to put her name on. She saved it, printed it. The machine whirred in the quiet. Each page came out with a soft slap. Her hands shook when she gathered the stack. The complaint described a pattern. Comments about her body, repeated invitations alone after work, messages that began as jokes and slid toward something else. Nothing in the document was graphic. It listed the facts, the dates, the locations, the name of her manager. She read it 3 times. Her fingerprints already smudged the paper. She felt sick. At 7:42 p.m., March 12, 2021, she stood up, carried the report to the glass door with the frosted sign, and buzzed to be let in. Human resources. The HR officer on duty was Mark Delaney, late 30s, pressed shirt, a mug with the company logo on his desk. He looked surprised to see someone at that hour. Then his expression turned serious when he saw the pages in her hand. "You want to sit down?" he said. She sat. The chair felt too soft. He asked if she wanted water. She shook her head. He closed the door behind her and came back with a legal pad. "Tell me in your own words first," he said. "Then we will walk through the document." She talked. Not about every detail. Enough. How the manager had started with friendly compliments. How jokes about her clothes and her figure became routine. How he asked her once to come by his apartment to look at a side project. How he brushed past her in narrow spaces without needing to touch her at all. Mark wrote while she spoke. He nodded. He asked about dates, witnesses, messages. He repeated the policy language, zero tolerance, retaliation prohibited. She heard those words and wanted to believe them. "I want you to know," he said, "we take this very seriously. You did the right thing by bringing it here." He walked her through the next steps. There would be a formal interview with the accused manager. There would be notes, possible suspension while they reviewed. He would need to talk to anyone she named as a witness. He did not explain how he would approach that manager. He did not say who else would know by morning. She did not know to ask. Before she left, he placed her written report into a folder and labeled it by hand. He locked it in a drawer. She watched the key turn. "This stays confidential," he said. "You are protected under company policy. No one is allowed to retaliate against you for making a good faith complaint." She thanked him. It sounded small in the closed room. By the time she reached her car, she felt split in two. One part relieved that it was out of her hands, another part terrified about what came next. The first shift came 3 days later, an email from operations. One of her key projects, a rollout she had managed from the start, was being reassigned. No reason, just a short note. "Leadership has decided to realign resources. Thank you for your contributions to date." She reread it. The language was cold. She forwarded it to herself at home and added the date. She told herself it might be unrelated. Companies shuffled projects all the time. Then she saw the internal dashboard that afternoon. Her name was gone from the project page. The manager she had reported had taken over her role personally. The second shift was her calendar. Meetings she normally attended disappeared from her schedule. Another email. "We are keeping this session to core leads only." Someone had changed the invite list. She checked with a colleague. He had not been removed. She walked into the HR office again. Mark met her with a practiced smile. He reminded her there was an ongoing process. He said certain changes were part of limiting contact and tension. He used phrases like temporary adjustments and nothing to worry about. She asked if her manager had been spoken to. We have had an initial conversation, he said. Has he been told that I filed a complaint? She asked. He paused for a fraction of a second. Then he said, we follow procedure. Names are handled carefully. I cannot share details of that discussion. She left with the feeling of a locked door that was not actually locked, a handle that would turn from the outside whenever someone else felt like it. The proof came a week later. She turned a corner near the break room and almost collided with her manager. He stopped so close that she could smell his cologne. The hallway was empty, so he said, "Lo, I hear you have concerns about how I talk to you." The air left her lungs. He smiled in a way that did not touch his eyes. "We will be clearing all that up," he said. "Make sure you keep your performance tight. This is not a good time for mistakes." He walked away. She stood there, ears ringing. She went back to her desk and opened the employee handbook. "Retaliation is strictly prohibited," it said. "Any employee who believes they are being retaliated against should report this behavior immediately to Human Resources." She stared at the line about reporting to HR, the same office her report had gone into. The same officer who said confidential and protected, while the manager now walked around with inside knowledge and a warning in his voice. That night, she printed the calendar changes, the project reassignment notice. She added them to a folder at home next to her original complaint. For the first time, a new thought entered her mind. The problem might not just be the man she had reported. It might be the one who locked away her report and promised to keep her safe. Chapter 2, Performance Help. The email subject line said check in. No urgency tag, no bold font, just two words and an invite from HR for 9:30 the next morning. She barely slept. She arrived early, watched people drift into the building, then walked to the HR office when the clock on her screen turned to 9:28. Mark was already waiting. The door closed behind her with a soft click. "How are you holding up?" he asked. She told him she was managing. She kept her answer short. He nodded slowly. "I want you to know," he said, "leadership is concerned about your well-being. They have noticed some slippage. We are here to support you." The word slippage caught her. "What slippage?" she asked. He glanced at a paper on his desk. "There have been some recent issues, a missed internal deadline, a late response to a client email, some tension in your interactions with your manager." "Those were after I filed my complaint," she said. He folded his hands. "Sometimes when an employee is under stress, performance can be affected. Our job is to catch that early and help." She felt the ground tilt. She asked for specifics, dates, times. He did not hand her any document. He described events in vague terms. "You seemed distracted in last week's planning call. A colleague reported you appeared upset after a meeting." She thought about the meeting where her manager had dismissed her idea in front of the team, how she had gone quiet for the rest of the call. She thought they had noticed the insult, not her reaction. "We are not here to punish you," Mark said. "We want to make sure you succeed." Over the next 2 weeks, he started logging things she did not even know were being counted. One delayed reply when she stepped away from her desk for a medical appointment became a note about response time. A corrected data entry after she caught her own typo became a note about accuracy concerns. Every small crack in a normal day now sat under a microscope. She never saw the notes. They did not appear in her inbox. They lived in a file she did not know existed. Colleagues started behaving differently. People who used to stop by her desk stayed in motion. One friend who always ate lunch with her started bringing food back to his workstation instead. When they did speak, it was quick and careful. "You good?" he asked once, barely above a whisper. She nodded. He did not push. Later she learned why. HR had called him into a small conference room and shut the door. Mark asked how she was doing. Had he noticed any changes in her performance? Had she ever spoken badly about management? The questions were framed as concern. The effect was pressure. The same process repeated with others. Short private chats, leading questions. Has she seemed emotional at work? Do you trust her follow through? People did what they usually do in those rooms. They protected themselves. One morning, she found her desk moved. the email came from facilities. Due to seating optimization, your workstation has been reassigned. The new desk sat near the back wall, away from her usual team, closer to a quiet corridor where traffic thinned. She walked through the open office with a cardboard box in her hands. No one said much, a few nods. One quick glance away when her eyes met someone else's. When she asked Mark about the move, he called it a step to reduce conflict during the ongoing review. "You mean you moved me away from him?" she said. "We're trying to create a calmer environment," he replied. "Less overlap, nothing more." From her new seat, she could still see her old team across the room. She just was not part of it anymore. The formal notice arrived on a Monday morning. Subject: Performance Improvement Plan. Her name in the line below. She opened it and read slow. "Concern about recent declines in performance. Need for immediate improvement. 60-day review period. Specific objectives to be met." The objectives did not feel specific. They felt stacked. Maintain flawless accuracy in all deliverables. Respond to all messages within a narrow window. Demonstrate positive attitude and resilience in all interactions. Each target carried language vague enough to stretch after the fact. She walked the printed copy into HR. "You said you wanted to support me," she told Mark. "This feels like something else." "This is support," he answered. "The company wants to invest in you. Documented expectations help everyone." "I filed a harassment complaint," she said. "Since then, my projects were reassigned, I was moved away from my team, and now I am on a performance plan." "How is that not retaliation?" "Retaliation is a serious allegation," he said. "These actions are business decisions based on performance observations. They are completely separate from your earlier report." He delivered the sentence with calm, practiced tone, as if it were a fact carved in stone. That afternoon, she stayed late at her desk, scrolling through emails. She searched her own name. She tagged key threads. She felt like someone standing in a field, picking up shell casings after a battle she had not started. The break came by accident. She needed a template for a status report and searched the shared drive. One folder down, another click, an open file titled Draft Talking Points. The document took a moment to load. When it did, her stomach turned. At the top, meeting with legal and HR regarding harassment complaint. Below that, bullet points. Keep focus on performance concerns. Emphasize recent mistakes and emotional responses. Avoid commitment on retaliation language. Frame all changes as support and business necessity. Her manager's name was in the header. Mark's initials sat at the bottom. The document had been saved 3 days earlier. She stared at the screen. Her pulse hammered in her throat. She printed a copy and sent it to her personal email. The printer whirred in the quiet office as night staff started their rounds. Standing there, waiting for the paper, she understood the shape of the problem. The HR officer had not turned away from her by accident. He had stepped to the other side of the table on purpose and brought a file with him. The question in her mind shifted, not whether this was retaliation, how to prove it before they buried her under the word performance. Chapter 3, Retaliation on Paper. She did not go to HR first this time. She went to a small office on the 10th floor of a different building, where the walls held shelves of thick books, and the woman behind the desk listened more than she spoke. The attorney read the performance plan, the project reassignment emails, and the talking points document with a pen in her hand. She underlined lines, circled dates, nodded to herself. "What happened to you is classic," the attorney said. "Harassment is the first story. Retaliation is the second story that tries to erase the first." "Can I prove it?" she asked. "You prove it through patterns," the attorney said. "Timing. Documents. Who knew what and when? HR is supposed to be a neutral investigator. Here they position themselves as your accuser's partner. They built a plan to make me fail," she said. The attorney tapped the paper. "This is their own language showing that. You keep everything. You write down every meeting, every change, every conversation with dates and times." Over the next weeks, she did exactly that. She created a timeline at home across her kitchen table. On one side, she listed the day she filed her complaint and what she reported. Next to it, she wrote every action that followed. Project removed. Desk moved. Check-in meeting about slippage. Performance plan. Draft talking points that tied her complaint to performance concerns. She printed calendar entries. She saved emails. She took notes after meetings while the words were still fresh. She made sure the file in her apartment stayed dry and flat and ready. One day during a follow-up meeting, Mark slipped. He sat with the same calm expression, reviewing the so-called progress on her performance plan. He said leadership remained concerned about her attitude. He said the company needed employees who could handle pressure without becoming emotional. "I became emotional after being harassed," she said. "After my manager found out, I reported him. After I was moved and put on this plan, you have to understand," he answered, "when someone in your position files that kind of complaint, leadership will look closely at everything you do." He froze after he said it. She felt the words hang heavy between them. "You mean because I reported harassment, they are looking for reasons to get rid of me?" she asked. He shifted. "I did not say that. My point is only that scrutiny increases in sensitive situations." She did not tell him about the small recorder in her bag that had been running since she walked in. The attorney had told her that state law allowed one party to record a conversation like this. She thanked him for his time and left. The file on her kitchen table grew thicker. Together with the attorney, she prepared a formal retaliation complaint, not just inside the company, to an outside agency and to higher leadership. The letter laid out the sequence: date of harassment report, description of her protected activity, the first project reassignment, the calendar removals, the desk move, the performance improvement plan, the discovery of talking points that focused on performance instead of the original complaint, the HR officer's recorded admission about increased scrutiny because she had filed. She did not soften the language. "This letter is to report unlawful retaliation for a good faith complaint," it said. It named names, it attached documents, it referenced policy pages the company had written itself. The confrontation came in a glass conference room near the top floor. On one side of the table sat her, the attorney, and a folder of carefully ordered pages. On the other side, a senior HR leader, a company counsel, and Mark, who now kept his eyes mostly on his hands. The senior leader opened by praising her years of service. He said they took concerns very seriously. He denied that any action had been taken for improper reasons. The performance plan was described again as support. Her attorney slid the talking points document across the table. "Please read the heading," the attorney said. The leader's mouth tightened as he read, her manager's name at the top. A focus on performance and emotional response. Instructions to avoid commitment on retaliation. "Is this company policy?" the attorney asked, "or is this targeted strategy against a complainant?" Company counsel leaned in. Legal phrases filled the air. Misunderstanding, draft language, not official. The attorney stayed quiet until they finished. Then she played the recording. Mark's voice came out of the small speaker, clear and steady. "When someone in your position files that kind of complaint, leadership will look closely at everything you do." The room changed. The senior leader shifted in his chair. Company counsel asked when the recording had been made. The attorney provided the date. It matched a meeting on HR's own calendar. What followed did not feel like justice. It felt like damage control. Weeks later, they called her in for a final meeting. Leadership acknowledged that the process had not lived up to company standards. They did not use the word retaliation. They did not admit wrongdoing. Instead, they offered a separation agreement. Money, a neutral reference. Health coverage for a few months, a clause that discouraged public discussion. The HR officer, she was told, would be moved to another unit. There was no mention of discipline. She sat there with the paper in front of her. The attorney had already walked through every paragraph. This was the kind of ending that systems like this were built to provide. Not repair. Containment. "You can say no," the attorney had told her earlier. "You can keep pushing. File suit, go public. It will take years. It will cost more time and more health than the number on this check." In the end, she signed. Not because she believed they were right. Because she understood the cost of fighting a machine that could outspend and outweigh her. On her last day, she cleared her new desk, placed her badge on the empty surface, and rode the elevator down quietly. No farewell party, no speeches, a few texts from colleagues who were still inside the system and careful about what they wrote. The HR officer stayed. He moved offices, took on a different title, kept using words like support and performance and policy, in rooms where people came to him believing the door behind them was safe. At home, she did one last thing. She kept her file, the timeline, the emails, the talking points, the recording transcript, the letter to the agency. She placed it all inside a plain folder and wrote a single word on the tab. Proof. It did not give her job back. It did not erase what happened. But it kept the truth from disappearing under the story written by HR. In a system built to protect the institution first and the victim last, sometimes the only thing she could carry out with her was the record that said she was never the problem.